free audio post-production by Alphonic.com.
Welcome to Deep Dive Genre. Swiss film director Tim Fehlbaum studied at the HFF Munich. While there, he made several short films, music videos, and worked as a camera operator on documentary films. In 2011, Tim made his feature film debut with the post-apocalyptic horror film Hell. He followed that up in 2021 with science fiction thriller Tides, which premiered at the Berlin Film Festival. His latest feature, September 5, which Tim co-wrote like his other two features, received an Oscar nomination for Best Original Screenplay and 10 German Film Prize nominations, among many other accolades. We talked to Tim via video call for this interview. Tim, welcome to Deep Dive Genre.
Hello, hi. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for sitting down with us today.
Of course, no, it's a pleasure.
And September, is it September 5 or September 5th, actually? I would say September 5th.
Yeah, we say September 5th, but you...
And your third feature was released this January, and among many other awards and accolades, nominated for the Oscar for Best Original Screenplay. And now in 10 categories for the German Film Prize. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. We felt very honored about both of these nominations.
Yeah, can you tell us a little bit about your journey to becoming a director?
Yeah, well, for me, I'm the very classic case of a movie kid that I was never interested in anything else than movies. So it was quite early on clear that my father also was passionate about movies. He has nothing to do with movies. He's a cineast, you would say, right? For example, one thing he used to do is like to watch Hitchcock movies and then read the interviews with François Truffaut. So quite early on, I had like an understanding. And then he showed these movies way too early. For example, The Birds I saw, I think, too early. It gave me nightmares also, I have to say. But on the other hand, I was really fascinated with it. And of course, that reading these interviews quite early on gave me a feeling that there's someone behind these movies making them and having a vision and having ideas for how to make them. So I was interested in that. And then I started actually with animation. I did like motion while in my summer vacation or so. I used to do that during school while other kids were out playing soccer or whatever. I was at home and doing stop motion. And then I lost my patience for that a little bit because it's super...
Very sort of like difficile and yeah.
Exactly. And then I have four sisters, and then my sisters, and I started to actually, I started with a book of not jokes but urban myths, you know. It was called Die Ratte in der Pizza. It had short stories that were just like half a page long or so of something weird that happened. These were basically the scripts, and my sisters had to star in these movies. And so that was that. And then, so as it was always clear for me right after Gymnasium, I started at the Munich Film School.
How do you choose your stories, or how do you commit to a project?
That's a good question. It's actually a question that I'm confronted with every day right now in this stage that I am. I was quite absorbed by the whole PR touring of September 5. And now I start to think about what's next. It's come. How does it continue? And of course, I always started to think, or that was always in the back of my mind. Now I really have a more time, as this whole touring with the film was a little bit more also absorbing my mind than I would have expected. So I think I could only compare it, might sound silly, but with the feeling of falling in love. Like it happens, and you know it immediately. If it's something that is really right, you know it immediately. And that's also what I try to say myself also. If it's not there, that feeling, maybe knowing immediately is wrong, but you have to have that, you have to want the need to immediately start the research about that topic, you know. If you don't have that feeling, then I think it's not the right. If you're like, oh, now I have to find out things. Like, you have to have that really honest at the beginning of at least or so. And that is why, like, yeah, it's just a certain feeling. The important thing is that also you listen to that feeling and that you listen to that heart feeling also, because of course, there are also other facts that you consider, like, okay, how could that movie be released? Who could be interested in that? Is that a topic that people think is relevant? So all these questions. But I think it's also important to not overthink these outside factors.
Mm-hmm.
That will come anyway in the process, but not when choosing the subject. And I think with September 5, it is interesting that when making this movie, we would have never thought that it would make this journey, like leading up to the 10 Deutsche Filmpreis nominations, or even to, we would have never dreamt of an Oscar nomination for Best Screenplay. And I'm pretty sure my theory is if we would have made the movie with that intention, probably we wouldn't have ended here.
Yeah. He said to the SAF, "I believe that a story about the power of images is particularly important today, because images can influence opinions and political decisions. In the case of Munich 72, I spoke to many people who no longer know exactly what happened, but the image of the masked man on the balcony is familiar. It seems to be burned into the collective memory." Hollywood director George Stevens, he directed Giant and A Place in the Sun, went even further when he saw Leni Riefenstahl's Triumph des Willens. He said he feels that all films are propaganda even. Do you feel that now, especially with AI on the rise as well, the way people perceive images and films and are influenced by them, is it changing, possibly even radically?
It is obvious, right, that we are surrounded by the media landscape that is so rapidly evolving that we might not even know yet what it means for us, how we perceive world political events but generally the world around us. And I think it's out of question that we are, I know it for myself, right, that constantly you are receiving, sending images, you are, everything can be live streamed today, or a lot of things can be live streamed today. And it is also part of a movie. Like back in a movie, at the time when a movie set, you still had to book a slot on the satellite to be able to send a picture from ABC Sports. They had these slots booked on the satellite. Like right now, everybody has a camera that also, as we showed in the film, was back then huge. And now it's everybody has in the pocket and can send something to a satellite at any point and spread it and be a reporter in a way. And so it's obvious that images play a more and more important role. And also, I know it for myself. I start to inform myself more via images in a way than via text. That might not be true, though.
Do you ever question the images you see? Because I have a tendency lately that I sometimes, when I see something, I'm like, okay, do I believe that this is actually a true image? Is it maybe doctored or...
Oh, no, I'm not yet at this point. I mean, I have certain media that I inform myself, right? And I have a certain trust that if I read something at Süddeutsche Zeitung or so, that it's not, or see an image there, that it's not a fake image.
Yeah.
So no, I'm not at this point yet.
Okay.
I also want to add to your question that you said, what I meant with that image, because I don't want to simplify in any way what happened on that day in Munich. And I don't want to in any way simplify the underlying conflict that led to that tragedy that is so complex and so, it's had so many layers that it's for us, we decided that we can't make that part of our story. But what I meant with that image is that, because we are telling the story very much from the media's perspective, what I meant with that image is that when I was preparing the movie, or now when people ask me, oh yeah, what is your movie about? I say about the tragedy of during the Munich 72 games, that I found it astonishing, like how many people didn't really know how it ended or what exactly happened.
Mm-hmm.
But what everybody would know is that image of the masked man on the balcony.
Yeah.
And that is just what I meant, that something about the power of images, that this seemed to have somehow burned into the collective memory.
Mm-hmm.
More than actually the political background or even how it ended.
Obviously, political drama is not an easy genre, especially if it's based on a real event. So you mentioned that at the beginning, you weren't quite sure how you would tackle that story. How hard was it for you and your co-writers to sort of find the right balance on where to put the focus of the story?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, like I come from the two previous films that I made were two post-apocalyptic science fiction movies in a complete different era, even though there are similarities in the approach, but it's completely different genre in a way. So I knew when approaching a subject that's based on a real story and especially something that is still so relevant today that we, before even writing the very first word, we need to do as much research as possible. And so at the beginning, we had a different approach where we quite classically told the tragedy of the day from multiple perspectives, from the police side, politician's side, perpetrator's side, etc. Also the victim's side. Like, so we even went into that apartment partly. And then two things happened. In a way, we're pretty far in the process already. And one storyline always has been the media.
Mm-hmm.
And then I must say there are two things happened. There was a little bit of a question of how to finance that because it was quite a big, big project. And the other thing that happened is that we also got a little bit of doubts.
Mm-hmm.
Are we really, in a way, almost, I would say, allowed to tell a story about that? Because also, as you might know, a lot of things are still unclear of what really happened.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know, but there's an investigation, especially an investigation of the police going on still right now as we speak.
I remember reading something about that. But
yes, that they started after the 50th Memorial Day,
mm-hmm.
on pressure of the families, I think.
Yeah.
And they're trying to find out what really happened on that day. So yeah, a lot of things are still unclear. I mean, we had Axis Moritz, the co-writer, he's coming from documentary field, actually, and he is even used to do so much research before he starts to work on something. And we had even access to the original police files that are in the Staatsarchiv, in the Bayerischen Staatsarchiv. Many unclarities. And what we certainly didn't want to do, especially with such a sensitive topic, is speculate on anything.
Yeah.
And so then we had in that research, and we were also really interested in that one storyline of the media and got deeper into research in that area. And then we found out what we didn't know before, what an important role the media actually played.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something, because another thing that we got confronted with a lot in preparation is like that people were saying like, oh, why another movie about this? We had Spielberg's Munich, there's this documentary. Why do we need another movie about this? Which I see a little bit differently because I think it's such an important topic. And also Spielberg's movie deals with more with the aftermath than with the actual events in Munich. But what I think what hasn't been told was that's the role that the media played.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to shed a light on that because we felt while, of course, other aspects of what happened on the day might even be more relevant, I have to say. And tragically enough, in the last years became even more relevant,
yeah.
Tragically. But this is maybe something that I wouldn't feel comfortable telling a story about, while the perspective of the media is something that I, as someone who's working the media myself, I very much connect.
Mm-hmm.
And we went deeper into research and then we had a conversation with Jeffrey Mason. That is a character played by John Magaro in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And listening to his stories, like what they experienced in that control room. He was working as a young rookie for ABC Sports and what they went through in that control room. That was so interesting that first, jokingly, after that Zoom that was supposed to be like 20 minutes long and it ended up being like 2.5 hours long. And afterwards, the producers, I'm blessed to be surrounded with a very creative group of producers, Thomas Webke, Philip Trauer from Germany, and from America, we had John Withermuth and John Palmer, who are with Sean Penn's company, and everybody else, Constantine also. They're like really creative producers. So with that research conversation was already with Philip and Thomas and the writer, and afterwards we looked at each other and said, like, we could actually set the movie entirely in that control room.
Yeah.
And then we said, like, let's try it out. Let's just see. And then it turned out to be like, after we had that, this is much more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And it is also something that I felt much more comfortable talking about. And it's getting back to that feeling of falling in love. It's now weird to say that in the context of such a tragic story. But I immediately felt like, oh, this is...
Yeah, it gripped you.
Yeah, I want to start. I want to know more about that apparatus, about ABC Sports, about how they made television, about what that had for consequences and everything. And so, yeah, it was immediately there.
Mm-hmm.
Getting back to that feeling, that the feeling that you can't describe, where you're just like, oh, I have to do this. I have to do this.
Yeah.
This is actually something, getting back to that question again, that I would say, if you don't feel the need...
Mm-hmm.
And I had yesterday... talk actually with my agent about a script, and I think my agent has said something very good getting back to the question again, you see that this question is very much on my mind constantly these days. We talked about some ideas, and he's like, look, do you wake up tomorrow with the feeling I have to do this movie? If not, then I would rather let it go. Once we had that idea and that approach and everything, I had the feeling I have to do that movie. I want to start working on it. I can't wait to talk to more eyewitnesses, to get into research. And so, yeah, so that's how it happened.
Mm-hmm. Talking about I want to know more and let's set it there. Film is a very image conscious medium that's set in a certain small amount of rooms, and how soon was that part of your decision and in how to approach the movie and the scenes and the dialogue?
This challenge is actually something that really drew me to the idea.
Mm-hmm.
How can I tell a story that takes place entirely in a room? That's almost something Hitchcockian about that idea, right? And
yeah.
He was obsessed with making a movie. He wanted to make a movie entirely taking place in a phone booth. He made movies that were set entirely in one apartment, like The Rear Window or Row, on a boat, Lifeboat, or Lady Vanishes on a train. And that challenge I found interesting. And there's something I admire about films that draw their strength from a certain limitation in space. Das Boot is another movie that we looked at from Wolfgang Petersen that also, like, you have a major event, but you see it from a very distinctive perspective. Everything we see from what's going on at the surface, we only see from the telescopes and with what they hear with the sonars. I was immediately like, okay, how can we do that? The writer, and also with Markus Förder, they said, like, let's try to make it as physical as possible. For us, it was also important to give today's audience an idea of how physical the analog television still was back there. You know, that they had these tapes that had to be threaded into machines, that it took long for an image to develop, how big the devices were. They had these buttons and everything. And we should feel that physicality. And also we said, like, we want to approach it almost as if it would be a heist movie.
Mm.
Except that they're not on the hunt for treasure or money or so, but on the hunt for pictures. And we want to generate that tension, yes. But first of all, I think we have a wonderful cast. And the one thing that the audience is still looking the most at are the eyes and or the faces of the cast. And even if they would just act in front of a black background, I think it would be wonderful to see them. Yeah, of course, the Markus Förder and I, we talked about certain ideas. Okay, this light changes or so that we want to make, or talked about a little bit about how we want to shoot the scenes, but not too much. Because on the other end, the approach on how to shoot it that we had was we wanted to shoot it as if we ourselves would be a documentary crew just observing these people in that room.
Yeah.
So the idea was that everything, since this is a film about the media, you know, it's also like, or a lot of things that are driving the narrative forward in the film are coming through these media devices. So the idea that we had is that we let as much as possible happen in reality on our set on these devices. And especially these monitor walls, which also was supposed to be the original monitors for back then, to get that to work in a way that when Tom McGar would give a direction or so, that it would actually have an effect on the monitor wall,
yeah.
And to have it ready with our images that we partly shot as a mix of archival footage with images that we shot ourselves on these monitors. But also what came through the telephones, walkie-talkies, we tried to have as much as possible happen in reality. And then make really long takes and just be like more in the corner with the cameras or so, and just cover it in a documentary style. Or not in the corners, that's actually not true. We said like, we can move freely in the room and as if we would be part of the crew in a way. And I think the actors also said like for them, we were almost invisible. Maybe that it also helped that we were generally in that studio environment. So camera in a way didn't, you know, it was part of the set in a way, or it disappeared almost into the set.
Do you have a favorite scene?
Yes, I will go to the next question. I can see I'm talking about this technical stuff. I get lost a little bit often. But I want to add one last thing. With that approach of shooting, it is essential then the editing, because you can generate a lot of material. And the answer to your question now, how do you keep the tension? How do you keep the audience engaged? A lot of that lies in the answer to the question in editing. That's also then when Hans Jörg, who is a brilliant editor, had the big challenge, and I think solved it brilliantly, to bring the rhythm to it and to keep the audience engaged. And ironically, it was often more about finding the quiet moments than about keeping the tension. The tension somehow was there. Question was the favorite scene, right?
the next question. Yeah, the favorite scene.
I would point out maybe two. The one is like shortly before they go live.
Yeah.
Jeff suddenly asks a question. So we're going live. Hold on a second. They threatened to kill people. What do we actually do if they want to go through with this? Do we show that or not? We're in live television. We have a responsibility to our viewers. And then they have a discussion on the hallway on how they would deal with that. There's one of the major dilemmas of the film, right? And it also shows in a nice way what is so special about Munich 72, that it was a bunch of sports people that were suddenly confronted with the challenges of crisis reporting. And that also, quite early on, we said, ah, that's so interesting about this concept. It's almost like they almost had an innocent view on these bigger ethical questions of journalism. So that is one. The other one maybe would be the moment also when the police comes inside the studio, where they realize what they film might not even only be seen by people around the world, but also by the people in that apartment. And the police came into the studio to tell them to turn off the cameras. And in a way, that's when suddenly the outside events came into the inside. And it also reflects the responsibilities of media. And
For your feature films, you've always written the scripts as well, sometimes alone, sometimes with a co-writer. How do you balance your director you and your writer you? Do they ever come in conflict, or are you pretty good at solving that?
No, I wouldn't say that this comes very often in conflict. Maybe as I'm also listed as a producer on the film, it rather comes in conflict with the producer myself. So sometimes you have things that you're like, oh, okay, this would be nice to have, but I know how much it would cost. But that's also a discussion that I then have with the producers. And the good thing about our group is that we always had the same vision in a way.
And you mentioned your other two feature films earlier. They're all quite different, but I'm still wondering if there's a through line. They all have a sociocritical or political message in a way. Do you feel like there's a through line, that even something that you feel there should be, or is it more about what talks to you in that specific moment creatively that made you want to tell that particular story?
It's hard to analyze these processes. I would say, yeah, maybe the similarity is in a way, like when we shot my first feature film, Hell, and I wanted to shoot a genre movie. But I mean, you have to remember, this was the year 2008 or so that we started. So it was, yeah, it was a time where genre films in Germany, like way before streamers or so, that was even made less.
Yeah. It's still tough. It's gotten a little better, but still anything genre is
Yes,
difficult.
No, that's true. But we had some great things also, you have to say. Like, this has really changed what's coming out of Germany. Like, for example, what Baron Boda did with Dark, you know, the series. Or, of course, Edward Berger with the war movie. 2009 or so, I was in film school still, and I said, I want to do... Actually, back then, the original idea was to do a zombie movie. I want to do a zombie movie. And again, like, I don't want to... But that was before Walking Dead. So I want to do a zombie movie, but I want to do it completely different. I want to take all the silliness away and put it in a really serious context and shoot it as if it would be a documentary art house movie, I would say, you know, with that feeling, and also cast it with actresses and actors that are maybe rather from the, that are very high level. I had Hannah Herzsprung, Lars Eidinger, Angela Winkler in front of the camera. Like, these are all actors that you would know rather from the art house high class cinema in a way. And I wanted to combine these two worlds. And I said, the way I want to shoot it again is like as if we and with the cameras would just be there and just observe what is happening. And I think that's also maybe the through line to all these three movies, is that approach of shooting it in that documentary style and in a very, I hope, physical, vibrant way.
You're in the last third of the PR and marketing and interview stage for September 5.
Oh, I hope I'm further. I hope so.
Well, I mean, now with the 10.
No, of course. And please don't get me wrong. I love to do the PR work on that.
But I'm sure it's a lot.
It's a lot, but I liked it with that film.
A film takes up to several years, and you've shot the film. You know, you've done all the pre-production, you've done the production, you've done the editing, and then now you take it out into the world. Is that easy for you? Are you ready to have people see the film and engage with it? Or is it hard to say goodbye?
It's always hard to say goodbye. It's not as much as it is with, in a way, it is more from the human factor. How hard it is to say goodbye at the end of a last shooting day. You also say goodbye to that crew. I had a wonderful crew, and we had the very much of that family feeling that I almost, that has been your family for a few months, you know, and you have very intense time together that then suddenly stops with the last shooting day. And then you see the sets being teared down and stuff. That can be heartbreaking. Of course, also now with the whole PR, like we had a group of PR people so that you also have a similar feeling, and then suddenly it stops. And when I see the movie or so, and I enter at the end or so, I realize, that was really, I enjoyed working on that movie so much, I have to say. And that was exceptional. I enjoyed every stage. I also enjoyed the writing, which I didn't ever so much before. I enjoyed the research stage, and I enjoyed the working, the prep, and working with my crew to shoot, and especially also the editing process with Hans Jörg. I enjoyed it very much. Music with Lorenz, sound design, really every stage. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, rather like worried a little bit, oh, will I find something again that I like so much?
Yeah. We're running a little bit over time, so I'm going to try and finish up, but I have a few rapid fire questions for you. I mean, we talked about this a little bit. I mean, is there a particular story that you would still like to tackle? I mean, maybe not in, like as the next project, but something that you're sort of keep coming back to.
Yes, there is, but I'm not going to tell.
Oh, damn it. Okay, well, but there is. At least we know that.
To the falling in love comparison, you know, also at the beginning when you don't want to say it.
Okay. What would you say is the biggest misconception for people outside of the industry about the work of a director and writer?
I would say you have to be also very organized, which is the part that I'm not very good at. So, but you have to be very organized and also like just quite a hard worker, I think, too.
Yeah, very disciplined.
Disciplined, that is the word that I look like. And I'm also not very good at that.
I doubt that. This is your third feature film and you've done several short films as well. Has the work changed over the years? And that can be something that obviously can come from outside or from how you approach the work.
Yes, no, I would say that has changed. I, of course, would also be not good if it wouldn't change. You evolve as a director. And I would maybe say in a positive way, I had a tendency to maybe care too much about the look, a little bit too much in comparison to the story, and there are more and more that is more and more about the story rather than the characters.
Well, and finally, I think it's more of a rhetorical question.
Yeah, I know.
Can you share what project you are?
I have ideas, but I won't tell.
Well, we'll find out eventually which project you'll choose next. And thank you so much for sitting down with us. It was a pleasure.
I thank you very much. I enjoyed it very much.
Deep Dive Genre is produced by German Films, the national information and advisory center for the promotion of German films worldwide. To find out more about our guests, check out the links in our show notes. To stay up to date with our episodes, subscribe wherever you find your podcasts.
Free audio post-production by Alphonic.com.